Hi, and welcome to this presentation on network security fundamentals. My name is Stephen Taylor, and I'm here today on behalf of Larry Hedick and myself to give you a little bit of additional information that's intended as an adjunct to the technology backgrounder on network security basics, which is available at WebTorials. And of course, we'd like to begin by thanking our sponsor for this presentation, Nortel Networks. Our agenda for this afternoon, we'll start off with an overview of the problem. Then we'll look at some of the various vulnerabilities and places you need to pay particular attention to. And then we'll move on to looking at the big picture of network security. Of course, network security is one of the most difficult parts of the entire networking landscape to address as a consultant. On the one hand, you can't tell someone never to be concerned about network security. There's too much liability there, and you do need to be concerned. At the same time, you need to make sure that those concerns are realistic and that you have an appropriate amount of attention paid to the security issues, because there are many, many security threats. You have threats to the workstations. You have to worry about whether the LANs and switches are secure. You have to worry about routers and firewalls, the wide area network, physical security. But ultimately, you have to make your decisions based on realistic evaluations of the security threats and not emotional, reactionary types of decisions, because anything can become unsecure. It's just a question of how secure does each particular network element need to be. So overall, we're talking about, once again, a balancing process here of what's the value of the information and how secure does that information need to be. So moving right ahead to looking at some of the places that we have vulnerabilities within the network, we'll start by looking at what the network looks like. And this is a pretty typical network architecture, looking at all the various components of a typical corporate network. Whether it's for a small business or whether it's for one of the largest corporations, you still have basically these same components. And what we're going to do here is, from a security perspective, break this down to each of the components and how you keep each of the components secure. So, doing a reverse build, we'll take out everything except the workstations, because the workstations are where the security picture starts. In fact, when we look at vulnerabilities, some of the most commonly experienced threats to information security come from the workstations themselves. Email viruses, viruses that are web-based, computer viruses, those all go all the way back to the workstation, which basically means that when you're looking at your security, you have to start with the workstation and make sure that you have appropriate antivirus software that's not only installed, but that's also kept up to date on each of the computers. Another very nuts and bolts workstation-related issue is laptop theft. We can spend lots and lots of energy worrying about what's going on in the wide area network, when in reality, you have people in most corporations who have the keys to the proverbial kingdom walking around on their notebook, and they might forget and leave the notebook in a taxi cab. At a very minimum, make sure that those notebooks are password protected, although that's not going to necessarily solve an awful lot. It'll at least be a beginning point to saying, okay, what is going to happen if that particular laptop were compromised? So, nuts and bolts experiences start with the workstations themselves. Then once we started with the workstations, the next point is to move to the switches, to the Ethernet infrastructure that makes up your LAN. Now, Ethernet has evolved a lot over the years, so let's talk about where Ethernet was and where it is today. In the good old days, Ethernet began life as a shared broadcast medium. That is, it was distributed so that all of the information for the corporation was available on that piece of wire that was the Ethernet. The advantage was that made it very easy to put everything together. The disadvantage was that all of the information was out there on the Ethernet. And in fact, because you can connect from any computer to any other computer today, there's still a bit of a perception among a lot of people that all of the information that goes from one computer to another is available. For old-styled Ethernet, that's true. For shared media Ethernet, either with a cable, all the information on a cable or using what we'd call a hub, then yes, that's true. However, that's not necessarily true for most installations today. If you look at installations of Ethernet today, they are very, very likely based on switched Ethernet. In fact, even small office, home office, cable modem routers have, and DSL routers have Ethernet switches built into them. The fundamental difference here is that rather than all of the information being available to every connection, only the information that is needed to go between two different ports, between two different devices, actually appears on the Ethernet. They could be 10 megabit per second connections, they could be 100 megabit per second connections, but the point is that they're not sharing everything on one piece of wire anymore. Now, in reality, this was not implemented as a security measure. It was implemented simply as a performance measure. However, it is inherently more secure because only the information that is destined for a given device is going to be going to that device with current generation Ethernet. Consequently, it's much more difficult than it's perceived to be to sniff packets on the Internet, that is, to tap into an Internet. So what is the story on packet sniffing? Bottom line, can packets be sniffed? Absolutely. Is it easy to sniff packets? No. Because in order to sniff packets, you have to be able to have physical access to the line. You have to be able to then tap the line somehow to decode the Ethernet plus the IP and the IP encoding, plus do all of this, and by IP encoding, by the way, that may be, for instance, for voice over IP, that there's additional information encoded there. There are multiple layers that usually exist beyond IP. There's TCP for data, and then you've got to be able to do it fast, and on top of that, the information, once you get all of that picked out, might be encrypted. And we'll talk a little bit more about encryption later. So, bottom line, can you sniff packets? Yes. Is it easy? Absolutely not. Bottom line, is it going to be worth the trouble? Is the information that's inside those packets worth as much as it takes to get to the information that's inside it? That's what all security basically boils down to. It's not that everything has to be totally secure. It just has to be much, 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 much more difficult to get to the information than the information has intrinsic value of. Okay? Is switched Ethernet a security risk? Not very high. It's typical to a telephone. We don't usually think of our normal telephones as being a huge security risk. Maybe we should sometimes, but in both cases it depends on having physical access, and in particular, if it is a switched Ethernet connection, it means that you're probably going to need physical access to the switch. Bottom line, put your Ethernet switches in a locked closet. So, if we move from the Ethernet switch to what today is called a wireless Ethernet access point, we've got the good news and bad news. Wireless Ethernet is absolutely marvelous for ease of installation, for moving people around, for saving money on wiring. At the same time, wireless Ethernet has a significant security component that's attached to it. Why? Wireless Ethernet acts like traditional Ethernet, but without the wires. What do we mean? We mean that there is a shared broadcast medium, in this case, sending signals through the air, that provides easy access to all of your information, but because it provides easy access, it's also a security risk. Now, going into lots of details on exactly how to deal with wireless Ethernet, and particularly with wireless Ethernet and security access for wireless Ethernet, really goes beyond what we can in this particular tutorial today. But let it be said that the security needs to be implemented very carefully and fully whenever you're looking at wireless. Don't assume that wireless Ethernet is anywhere near as secure as traditional Ethernet. Can it be made secure? Yes. Is it intrinsically secure? Absolutely not. Work with your wireless vendors on that. let's look at wireless Ethernet. Okay, so far we've only talked about the information via either the Ethernet switch or the wireless Ethernet that is locally on your campus. But ultimately, this information is going to be going through something called a router. And as you know, a router is basically a device that today will take information based on the IP header, based on the IP address that's in the front of each packet of information, and then send it to the appropriate location, either leaving it on the local network if it doesn't need to go across the wide area network, or more importantly, sending it appropriately across a wireless across a wide area network. So the question is, how do we deal with IP, and is IP intrinsically a security risk? Fundamentally, IP is not a very secure protocol. The whole idea to IP is that it's an awful lot like the U.S. mail. You put an address on the front of a packet of information and it gets delivered to its ultimate destination. That acts an awful lot like, and so part of that is that not only can you send a packet to anywhere, but because IP is such an open protocol, you also can set your own IP address. In general, you take very, very, very minimal knowledge of an operating system to change your IP address that you're sending out information with so that you can spoof and appear to be another IP address. Consequently, whenever information is being shared, there's a need for authentication to make sure if someone tells you that information is coming from IP address 12.123.123.123, that it's really coming from IP address 12.123.123.123. That's the bad news. The good news is this is a well-known product and is mostly solved. We have authentication procedures already in place so that, in general, you're going to know that that information is coming from a trusted source. There's another very important part to IP addressing that, again, is a security advantage that came from somewhere else. We mentioned that earlier in terms of switched Ethernet being more secure, even though security was not the major driver for it. This is something called network address translation, or NAT, and sometimes when one is using network address translation, it's spoken of as having NATing going on. Now, what using network address translation, or NAT, is all about is basically in some device, and it's usually the router or a router combined with a firewall, there's a problem in terms of there not being enough public addresses for the Internet. And what has happened over the years is this technology called network address translation was designed in order to let multiple private addresses on a given local area network then have a public presence, have a different address on the public network so that there were enough IP addresses to go around. The nice part of that, though, is that in reality, the actual address of a device, such as a workstation on a local area network, is often hidden from the network as a whole, is hidden from the wide area network. For instance, if you have four workstations that are behind a router firewall that's using network address translation, all four of those may appear to have the same IP address when they're communicating with a web server. They just use different sub-addresses. However, at the same time, they can still each access the network. What does this do? Number one, it saves on IP addresses, which is particularly a major issue while we're still using what's called IP version 4. But it also means that it's more difficult for someone to connect to your particular computer from the outside when you're using network address translation because your real address is hidden. That's the good news. The bad news is, what if you want somebody to find you? Particularly in the convergence world, you may want to do session sharing. You may want to accept calls using something called Session Initiated Protocol, or SIP. Sometimes holes are poked in the firewall for that. Sometimes more advanced methods are used. Once again, getting into the deep details of how to have your firewall and router interact with SIP is beyond the scope of this particular presentation, but it is certainly something that you need to be aware of as you move forward with that type of capabilities. Now, I've talked about routers. There's another piece of equipment that we're going to talk now that's often very closely associated with a router. And that piece of equipment is a firewall. In fact, I put them in a box here because very often today you'll find router functions and firewall functions integrated. However, you'll also find lots of firewalls that exist by themselves. You'll also find firewalls as software implementations, for instance, on PCs. The whole idea of a firewall is to limit and control connectivity among network elements so that not all of the things that are on your corporate network have access to the internet and vice versa. Connections coming in from the internet may or may not have access to the corporate network. Firewalls do this by a number of different levels. Sometimes it starts off with the IP address, then there may also be firewall rules set on the port number within the IP address, and then it gets more complex from there all the way to having application-specific firewalls as some of the more advanced technologies here. The main thing, though, is that you have to have firewalls to provide that connectivity, many different ways that they can be implemented. Again, integral to router sometimes, sometimes as separate pieces of equipment, and certainly software firewalls. Why do we need all of this? Because we're ultimately connecting to the wide area network. Not only do we need to be protected from the wide area network and protect our access to the wide area network, we also, though, from a networking perspective, need to choose appropriately so that our information remains secure within the wide area network. So let's talk about the different WAN services. Particularly when security is concerned, you often find people with very, very strong opinions so far as what's the most secure or the most appropriate WAN service. So let's look at each of these various WAN services and kind of see where the security stacks up there. Of course, the most traditional WAN services are what are called private line services. The private line services provide dedicated bandwidth on a per-circuit basis, using something called TDM or Time Division Multiplex technology. See, this gets into one of the biggest myths, which is that private lines are indeed, quote, private. Yes, it's true that if you have a T1 line coming into your premise, it might or might not come in on one particular wire. However, once it gets into the network infrastructure, those private lines are really private only in that they are connected between two points with dedicated bandwidth. But certainly, it's extremely likely that they are going to be mixed, if you will, with other traffic within the network infrastructure. So, they're private, but a much better terminology is a leased bandwidth. LEASED, leased bandwidth line that provides guaranteed bandwidth between two points, okay? But you're not necessarily guaranteed that they're not close to any other bandwidth, and it certainly is almost a given that they're not going to stay on their own piece of wire. They're going to be in the electronics with other circuits. Now, how does that differ from frame relay and ATM? Really, very little. Frame relay and ATM, the major difference is that the bandwidth there is mixed on a packet-by-packet basis as opposed to being dedicated bandwidth for each individual user. But in both cases, you're going to have the internals of your bandwidth sometimes competing with other users, but definitely sharing the same facilities and the same switching infrastructure. And in this case of frame relay and ATM, the network addresses are set by network operations, very much like your phone number is set by the network operations center. What does this mean? Ultimately, it means that for private line, frame relay, and ATM, their intrinsic architecture is that they're quite secure. That is, in order for the lines to be tapped within the network infrastructure, you pretty much have to have access to the network infrastructure. So at some point, you've got to decide to what extent you can trust your service provider. The good news is that most service providers for most applications are extremely trustworthy. At the same time, there are times that you may need to add encryption. And you can add encryption. Encryption basically makes it extremely difficult, although one would argue that it's probably not impossible, to make it extremely difficult to get to the actual content of the data conversation. Ultimately, though, what you've got to be able to decide is how much do you serve your trust your service provider, and when you see the guy on the pole in the orange hat, is that a hacker or a repairman? And how do you know? Good news is, usually it's a repairman. Certainly once you get inside the central offices, the probability of having a hacker is extremely low, but it's not impossible. That's why you have encryption. That's also why certain industries have standards that specify that you must use encryption in certain circumstances. Moving on to another type of network, we have what are called private IP VPNs. Private IP VPNs are sometimes called IP services. And these private IP VPNs basically use IP as the mechanism, for interfacing with the network. IP addresses are the primary network interface. And in this case, by the way, you probably would not use network address translation. You might, but you probably wouldn't. And you would, in fact, use your own private networking addresses throughout your entire network. You can get by with this because each individual network is its own network. We're not talking here about using the Big I public internet. We're talking here about basically a virtual private IP network that is just for each individual enterprise. Now, oftentimes these are based on multi-protocol label switching or MPLS, where you have something called LSPs, label switch paths, that are virtual circuits that are configured based on an IP address. But these IP addresses are all your private IP addressing scheme. So basically, it still appears just like a frame relay network, just like an ATM network, just like a private line network, in that you are still connecting your routers to your routers. You're not interfacing with the public internet. Now, another way this is sometimes deployed is as more of an IP-only type basis using a technology known as virtual routers. Really doesn't matter. There's still appropriately secure services, and again, the security issues are going to be very similar to the ATM and frame relay security issues in terms of trusting your service provider, but it's still a closed user group. Whenever we're using the internet, we probably should refer to the internet as an open user group as opposed to a closed user group. Because with the internet, you truly have any-to-any connectivity. You use IP as your fundamental interface, and then you can connect to anybody anywhere. That's both the good news and the bad news, because as soon as you can connect to the public internet, all bets, so far as exactly what your connectivity is going to look like, are off, and there is no inherent security here. In fact, let's look a little bit more closely at the internet and why I'm so adamant that there's no inherent security. The reason is, when you're using the public internet is actually a network of networks. In fact, that goes back to the very name, internet, between networks. Yes, it's true that you can get any-to-any connectivity, but the internet is not one network. It's really many, many networks provided by ISPs, Internet Service Providers, who connect to each other at what are called peering points. Consequently, even though you may be very comfortable with ISP number one in the diagram here as your network service provider, your competitor may very well be using Internet Service Provider number two, and you may in fact want to connect to someone else who is on Internet Service Provider number two. So the question is, how do you keep those connections from left to right going across multiple service providers, some of whom you don't even have a business relationship with? How do you keep those particular connections secure and safe? Well, the most usual way to do that is with something called an IPsec VPN. And the IPsec VPN uses the internet as the transport layer. So it uses multiple networks that may be making up the internet for transport. And then you build tunnels through the internet. And basically what these tunnels are secure paths based on using encryption and encrypting all of the traffic that you're sending across the internet using a mechanism called IPsec. And from a very high level, what IPsec is an IP message that has another IP message encrypted inside of it. Sometimes you encrypt the entire message and put it inside another IP packet. Sometimes you just encrypt the payload. But either way, what happens is that you have an IPsec message that can be routed across the public internet, but the actual content of that particular message is encrypted. So it's a mechanism to authenticate and secure VPNs over public IP services. Now, how do you do this? Sometimes it's via software. Sometimes you use appliances in order to help get that process accomplished. Now, there's another internet-based service that's very, very similar to IPsec. And that particular service is called SSL, for Secure Socket Layers. And what SSL is all about is basically the same idea as IPsec, in that you encrypt the information that's going across the internet. However, rather than setting up tunnels for all of the traffic going between two points, it's set at a much higher layer and basically goes between a browser and a server. Now, once again, particularly on the server side, this is sometimes done via software in the server, and it's sometimes done via another appliance. But one way or the other, you end up with that same method that, because you're going across the internet, you absolutely must have the encryption, and this provides that level of security for having a secured transaction. So what's the bottom line on choosing a WAN architecture? Basically, everything we talked about. Private line, frame relay, ATM, private IP, internet-based VPNs using IPsec, and internet-based VPNs using SSL all work. And all of them can be secure. However, all of them can be implemented in a way, frankly, that they're not secure. You can take the most intrinsically secure of these methods and implement them in an unsecure fashion. Or you could do the other way. You can take the least secure but implement it in a secure fashion. It's basically your choice. One size doesn't fit all in this case, and corporate religion is going to be a major decision-making factor, but certainly a huge part of that corporate religion, so far as what your corporation would like to use, has to be looking at the security aspects for these wide area networks going across the internet. So let's move on to the last point in the presentation, taking a quick look at the big picture. As we said earlier, this is your network. This is what your network looks like today. The question is, who's guarding the door to the network? And this is a question that you should be asking yourself both figuratively and literally. From the figurative perspective, have you taken all of the appropriate precautions that we've been talking about? And certainly there are many more that you have to be concerned about as well. But there's also the issue of literally guarding the door. Physical security is one of the most important aspects of network security, and it's also one of the most often overlooked. There is a great example that actually is not an urban myth of the credit card company that had all of their credit card numbers stored on various servers. And one day, rather than having someone who accessed through the internet and stole credit card numbers, someone actually walked into the door, picked up a server, and walked out of the door with the PC that had all of the credit card numbers on it, millions and millions of credit card numbers. You've got to lock the doors. You've got to lock the equipment cabinets when you're talking about physical access. You've got to take those common sense precautions. If you do that, you'll have a great network, or at least a start toward it. So thanks very much for spending the time with us on this particular presentation. I think we've given you some ideas and some starting points on the various vulnerabilities you need to be concerned about, and also a little bit of the big picture in terms of keeping the entire security story in perspective. For more information, there's lots of security information at the WebTorials website, and certainly we would also encourage you to talk to Nortel Networks, who sponsored this presentation, about their particular security solutions. Thanks again.